Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at our studio in the East County Wellness Center in El Cajon. We open our show today with a troubling breaking news story. Several registered sex offenders have been released recently in East County, with promises from authorities that electronic monitoring would protect people in the community. But on Monday, a sex offender who was being monitored by authorities broke into a 70-year-old woman's home in Hacumba and molested her, the sheriff's office has announced. John Wilson Kreischer, 68 years old, reportedly kissed and fondled the woman before leaving her home. He was arrested a short time later after the victim called authorities. Kreischer is charged with sexual battery and burglary. His bail is set at $50,000. Kreischer has previously been convicted of forcible rape and lewd conduct with a child. He has been registered with the state as a sexually violent predator. In 2009, he was again arrested for failing to register as a sex offender, but he was released from custody yet again in 2013 and was last registered as a transient living in the Lemon Grove area. As a condition of his parole, he was being reportedly monitored by a GPS system. But that electronic monitoring failed to protect his latest victim from harm. While it may have enabled authorities to capture him after the assault, it did nothing to prevent the crime. John Kreischer's latest assault raises serious questions about just how safe East County communities really are when predators have been released or are proposed to be released in the future. Supervisor Diane Jacob notes that of six predators placed in rural East County in recent years, at least three of them later violated the terms of their release. Supervisor Jacob has long opposed the placement of sexual predators in these rural communities. And yet, as we record this session, a hearing to place yet another sexual predator is taking place in San Diego, where a Superior Court judge is determining whether or not to allow a convicted pedophile who sexually assaulted several young boys to be released in rural Campo. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
A 43-year-old Santee man has the first confirmed local case of West Nile virus this year, the County Health and Human Services Agency reports. There has not been a human case of the disease in San Diego County since 2012. The disease, which is transmitted by mosquito bites, was detected during routine screening of blood that the man donated. He did not recall any mosquito bites lately, but may have been bitten while camping outside the state recently. The county's Department of Environmental Health Vector Control Program is inspecting for potential mosquito breeding locations near the man's home and setting up mosquito monitoring traps in the surrounding areas of Santee. Wilma Wooten, the county's public health officer, says a dead crow tested positive for West Nile virus in the city of San Diego last week, so the virus is definitely in our region. She adds, it's important for the public to know West Nile virus is a dangerous and potentially deadly disease. The California Department of Public Health reported 15 deaths related to the West Nile virus in the state last year. Of those who become infected with West Nile virus, 80% will have no symptoms. About 1 in 5 people who are infected will develop only a mild illness that includes a headache, fever, nausea, fatigue, skin rash, or swollen glands. Less than 1% of those infected will have serious neurologic complications that can be life-threatening. The risk of complications increases for those over age 50 and for people with weakened immune systems. Health officials urge people to protect themselves by practicing Prevent, Protect, Report. Prevent mosquito breeding. Dump out or remove any backyard item that can hold water, such as plant saucers, rain gutters, buckets, garbage cans, toys, old tires, and wheelbarrows. Mosquito fish, available for free from Vector Control, may be used to control mosquito breeding in backyard water sources, such as neglected swimming pools, ponds, fountains, and water troughs. Protect yourself from West Nile virus by staying inside when mosquitoes are most active between dusk and dawn. Wear long sleeves and pants when outdoors. Use insect repellent. And make sure screens on windows and doors are in good condition and secured. Report dead crows, ravens, jays, hawks, and owls, and green swimming pools to the Vector Control Program at 858-694-2888 or vector@sdcounty.ca.gov. You can also download the Fight the Bite app to anonymously report green swimming pools, mosquito breeding areas, and dead birds. For more information about West Nile virus, go to the San Diego County's Fight the Bite website. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Ed Barrena.
Now, straight from the headlines, bringing you our latest top newsmakers. This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at our brand new studio in the East County Wellness Center in El Cajon. My very special guest today is Dick Rogers, and Dick is the past president of the El Cajon Lions Club. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Now, Dick is here today to tell us all about a camp that the Lions Club puts on. It's called Camp Jack. It started Monday of this week up at Camp Oliver in Descanso, right where our KNSJ transmitter is located. Dick, tell us what's special about this camp.
This camp is run totally by the Lions Club and funded by the Lions Club. It's just for at-risk kids, and it's totally free to anyone that wants to attend.
Wonderful. Now, there's an interesting story in how this all got started. It came about because of a man named Jack Wyatt. And Jack was a foster child himself, I understand. Tell us a little bit more.
Jack was born and raised in Brawley. I don't know when he moved to San Diego, but he became an insurance man. And as a member of the San Diego Lions Club, decided that he'd like to do something for the kids, at-risk kids, as he called them, and solicited the help of his Lions Club, and then consequently, we have a district, which is San Diego and Imperial County, and all the Lions Club in that district were invited to attend and help him put it together.
Now, how do they define at-risk children? I understand it's a fairly flexible definition so that no deserving child is left out. But what are some of the categories of at-risk children that are welcome at this camp?
Well, they're selected because the school counselors recommended them, the Boys and Girls Club recommended them, maybe a probation officer had someone he'd like to see go. The term at-risk is not specific to any one child or any one category. It's just kids that are inner city kids that have never been out to a camp out situation.
Yeah, I understand it also includes children who may have a parent in jail, for example.
Yes, if they got an incarcerated parent or they themselves have been through a probation, they're certainly welcome.
So a lot of these are inner city kids. Some of them have never been out much in the outdoors, in the wilderness. What's that like for them, and what are some of the kinds of experiences that they get at this camp?
Well, the first thing we do on Sunday, they get an orientation period where they're taught the rules and the language of the camp. And then our Lions Club, the El Cajon Lions Club, provides a barbecue, all you can eat. And if you see some of these kids when they go back to the table for the second and third time, you know they don't have a real good family life where they can say they sat down to a regular meal. We don't have any limitations on what they eat. The next day, Monday, they start a program where there's a swimming pool, swimming lessons, archery, all the camp crafts that you'd expect, mm-hmm. they're provided.
Mm-hmm. Then they get to do fishing. I understand you're taking some kids out to Lake Cuyamaca this week.
Depending on how many sign up, we will do 2 days, Tuesday and Wednesday, if we have that many sign up. It can just be a one-day fair. They're provided little vans to take them up there. We have Lions who will meet them at the fishing dock, provide poles, lines, bait, provide the knowledge to show them how to do the bait, although most of the girls never want to do it anyway, and show them how to untangle lines. Of course, most of the time we do that too. The main thing is to keep them in occupied, get their fishing line in the water with bait, and hopefully they'll catch something. And when they do, it really becomes a big thing.
I bet you. And they get to stay in cabins. They even get a chance to camp out under the stars one night, I understand.
Yes, they have 10 kids per cabin with two counselors. And we have an outdoor program. Like you say, one night they get to sleep out. I'm not sure the word get is right. Some of them aren't too fond of it, but because they don't know about animals and stuff, they're from the inner city. But they do, and they really enjoy it later on.
Mm-hmm. Now, what about discipline and behavioral problems if some of these are troubled children? Do you have any issues with that, or does everybody pretty much get along up there?
I think the law averages says you're bound to have somebody or a couple of kids that still want to act the way they do at home or with their friends. And the counselors are trained to take care of it, but in a lot of cases, the kids themselves take care of it. The kids that are there to have a good time and learn things don't want to be bothered by a kid with a bad attitude. So usually it takes care of itself.
Yeah, I know you've told us before in the press release you sent out that these kids may be labeled at risk, but to us, they are the sweetest, most polite, well-behaved, and appreciative children for the most part. What do you think is the most important thing that the kids take home with them from this camp?
Well, it's not just one thing. They actually learn how to deal with other people. They learn authority to an extent. In some cases, they're not used to it, but this authority is administered in a different way, mm-hmm. so they're more receptive to it. And I think we send out a questionnaire at the end of the camp, and they say that the three things that they enjoyed the most was making new friends, the swimming pool, which, of course, most of them don't have, and, of course, going fishing, which in a lot of cases none of them have.
Wonderful. So they wind up taking home memories to last a lifetime.
That's the term we like to use.
Now, for those who may not be familiar with the El Cajon Host Lions Club or the Lions Club in general, Dick, can you tell us a little bit more about how the Lions Club got started and some of the other important programs that they do?
Well, it goes back a long ways, and I'm not real good on dates, but Helen Keller challenged a group of businessmen to do something to help the blind. And they did, as a group of businessmen, form the Lions Club. And now they're worldwide. The last time I heard, we had 153 countries, not mm-hmm. clubs, but countries where there were lion clubs in the world.
Now, I've seen that you have a donation drive ongoing for people to donate their used eyeglasses. And what do you do with those?
The eyeglasses that we get that are used, they're sent to a office that we run in San Francisco area. And they get their prescriptions off the glasses using this machine, and they tag them. And then, as needed, they're shipped out to various locations around the world. Our last shipment went to Guatemala. And they give these out free. They're not always the best-looking glasses, but they're functional.
Wonderful. Well, as someone who can no longer read without my glasses on, I can't imagine what it would be like to, as we age, to not have a pair of reading glasses. That's a wonderful thing that the Lions are doing.
We have boxes that we put out in businesses on the counters and in mobile home parks soliciting your donation, especially in eye doctors' offices, and soliciting your donation. And then when mm-hmm. they're full, why, they just call us and we come pick them up.
Well, very good. Are there other things that the Lions are involved in that you'd like our listeners to know
about?
We
do. Blindness is our main thing, and we really concentrate all our efforts, not all our efforts, but most of our efforts on that. But we also work with canine companions. Mm-hmm. We do some diabetes.
Training seeing eye dogs?
Yeah, we pay for the training. We pay for the dogs to be purchased, and then after they're purchased, and they're sent through a test period, and if they're not going to work, then, of course, they're let go. But if they are, then they go through a real lengthy training process.
Nice. Very nice. And then you also are involved in diabetes?
Very minor. Sight is our primary thing, but actually, you know, on request, we can do multi-things. But when it boils all down to it, our major fundraisers are all pointed towards the eyeglass program. And I say eyeglass program, maybe I should stop here and explain that we provided a machine to school districts. They have to borrow it from us and take it around between each school district. And they test students' eyes to see if they're bad. If they are in need of glasses, then we send them to a eye doctor that we have a contract with, and sometimes some of the bigger companies, and they test them and verify it and then prescribe the glasses and give them to the kids, which we pay for. So that sometimes runs $12,000-$15,000 a year to keep that program going.
Wow, that's a wonderful thing that you're doing. And it isn't just Lions, it's Lionesses. It's open to men and women.
Yes, men and women are welcome. Our current president, who was just installed last month, is a lady.
Well, very good. If people want to get more information, get involved, volunteer, donate their glasses, maybe they have a kid that they want to send to camp next year that they think is eligible for an at-risk youth, how would they get in touch and where would they get more information?
Well, the best bet is to go online and look up our website. We have a website that is easily accessed, and it's not just the El Cajon Lions, it's all the Lions in the district.
So if you just go Google El Cajon Lions or Lions Club, if you're in a different city, community in San Diego County, then you can find one close to you.
Right.
Very good. Well, Dick, I want to thank you very, very much for joining us here today to talk about Camp Jack and all of the other wonderful things that the Lions Club is doing right here in East County and around the world.
Thank you.
You're listening to East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM, Descanso.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
This is Miriam Raftery with today's Green Scene Report, bringing you details about a so-called green energy project that is actually polluting desert on public lands and may be threatening a town's water supply. For many months, residents in Ocotillo have complained about oil leaking from dozens of wind turbines at the Ocotillo Wind Energy Facility. East County Magazine asked the California Environmental Protection Agency's Department of Toxic Substances Control what steps it is taking to address these complaints. We also sent photos documenting hydraulic oil leaks from gearboxes in numerous turbines at the project. In response, Sandy Nax advises us that an investigation is underway and a summary of violations has been issued to Ocotillo Wind Energy. Residents have documented oil leaks at over 40% of all turbines on the project, and now they are voicing concerns that oil leaks could contaminate the town's only supply of drinking water. Jim Pelly, an engineer who lives in Ocotillo, told us that he worries that as these turbines age, leaks could pollute the federally protected underground aquifer. Pelly states, no water, no town. If the water gets polluted, all homes in Ocotillo could be red-tagged. Nax said that a summary of violations is more formal than a citation and that the project owner is addressing the alleged violations. She adds, we are continuing the complaint investigation on these allegations and other violations. Nax said the agency has directed Ocotillo Wind Energy to remove the used oil and handle it as hazardous waste. In addition, Ocotillo Wind has been asked for an explanation as to why so much oil is being released and to remove any additional oil as it is discovered. Despite residents' worries over water quality, when asked if the water in Ocotillo has been tested recently to see if these oil leaks have gotten into the water supply, Nax replied, no. She added that the groundwater depth varies down to 300 feet in places, but that the EPA investigation has not revealed evidence that the oil contamination has moved beyond the surface. It was not clear, however, without testing, how the agency can determine that none of the hydraulic oil has penetrated deep below the water's surface. The oil is clear, visible at leaking turbines, mostly only when blowing sand sticks to the goopy substance. Thus far, the state has not made a finding of an imminent threat to public health and the environment, but Nax says, if this changes, the Environmental Agency could move to require that Ocotillo Wind cease operation of one or more turbines. Park Ewing, a former construction manager who lives in Ocotillo, estimates that at least 40% of the project's 100 or more turbines have oil leaks at any one time. Jim Pelly said a company called Sky Climber has been hand-cleaning turbines just about every day. The process can take several days if oil is also splattered on the wind turbine blades. The area has been plagued by severe dust storms, due in part to scraping bare the desert soil to build the project, leading Pelly and some to question whether dust storms may be damaging the turbines. Though less than 2 years old, the project has already seen multiple gearboxes have to be replaced. Residents are also alleging that workers for Siemens, the turbine manufacturer, attempted to cover up oil leaks with shovels on the desert floor. East County Magazine has contacted Siemens and Ocotillo Wind Energy, as well as Pattern Energy, builder of the project, to request comments, but has not yet received a response. Oil isn't the only chemical contaminant plaguing neighbors of the wind project. The same state environmental agency has previously confirmed that a white, sludgy foam seen washing across the desert streets and lawns in Ocotillo during construction was a dust suppression chemical used during construction of the wind project. East County Magazine won an award for our story last year titled What's Polluting Waterways in Ocotillo? And sadly, it appears it is still going on. Last week, on July 14th, Pelley sent photos showing yet another occurrence of flooding with masses of foaming brownish-white sludge bunched up around the turbines and across the desert floor. The contamination also spilled into waterways that flow into the town. And yet, to date, no cleanup has been ordered of this contaminant either, despite the fact that the chemical becomes flammable when it dries out. Edie Harmon, a biologist and Ocotillo resident, wants to know why so many turbines are leaking oil and being replaced less than 2 years after the project was built. She says, the concerned public deserves honest answers, because these monster machines are located on the federal public lands managed by the Bureau of Land Management. Residents have tried complaining to the BLM to no avail. Park Ewing says, we can't get any help out here. Pelley told East County Magazine that he and other residents have complained to, quote, just about everybody we could think of, unquote, including the county, federal BLM officials, an Environmental Justice Task Force, and the State Environmental Agency. He told us, typically, we don't get any replies back from our emails. Though these complaints have been well documented with photos and videos now for many months, the turbines remain in operation, spewing oil into the environment and white sludge with seemingly every major rainfall, all atop the town's only source of drinking water. With more wind projects proposed or slated to be built in East County, this is an issue that should concern us all.
This is Leon Thompson with a public service announcement from the County of San Diego. It's raining cats and more cats over the county animal shelters. To help ease this overabundance, the shelters are offering up a special to help these felines find their forever homes. All cats, including kittens, are available through the end of the month for a Your Price is Right special. There's no minimum amount required, just a you-name-it donation and promise of a good home. If you fall in love with two, that's okay. Take Kit and Caboodle. Animal Services Deputy Director Dan DeSouza says, we are inundated with cats, and now is a great time to adopt because there are so many to choose from, all sizes, shapes, colors, and models. Our numbers change every day, but I would say among the three shelters, we have almost 500 cats. Each adoption includes vaccinations, a free vet exam, microchip, and spay or neuter. Kittens are available to take home, but DeSouza thinks adult cats are just as much fun to adopt. Adult cats are great because you can see exactly what they'll look like and how their personality has developed, he said. They're typically beyond the rambunctious juvenile stage. The Your Price is Right special on cats at the county's three shelters, Bonita, Gaines Street, and Carlsbad, goes through July 31st.
How long high school football players can practice each week and how rough those practices can be may be changing in California. A bill that seeks to reduce brain injuries and concussions has passed the legislature and is awaiting Governor Brown's signature. Assemblyman Ken Cooley says his bill will limit full contact practice time each week and ensure injured athletes don't return to the field too soon.
What this bill does is within that 18-hour framework, it provides for 3 hours of contact practice, meaning game-like conditions. Mm-hmm. So 3 hours total on 2 days, 90 minutes apiece within the 18-hour framework.
Some coaches have expressed concern they won't have enough time to teach players with the practice restrictions. Cooley says football practice techniques that minimize exposure to concussion are becoming more common in the NFL, but haven't sifted down to the high school level. He believes his bill will help reassure parents and even help save high school sports.
I actually believe this will safeguard the viability of football programs. It will reassure parents that if their son wants to participate in football, that there's a strong framework to keep them safe while they learn this great American sport.
NFL Hall of Fame quarterback Warren Moon headlined Cooley's Practice Like Pros clinic at UCLA on Tuesday to demonstrate techniques to conform with the pending legislation. If signed into law, the changes would begin with the 2015 season. This is Lori Abbott, California News Service.
Getting married is a big decision, but once you've found that special one, why wait? Effective immediately, bridal couples can walk into the County Administration Center downtown, pick up a marriage license, and get married. No appointments necessary. No muss, no fuss. For the second year in a row, the Assessor Recorder County Clerk is offering walk-in Wednesdays weddings during the summer months. The office came up with the concept after noting an uptick in marriage licenses and ceremonies during that time period in the last several years. The office decided to boost staff on Wednesdays to perform more ceremonies and allow walk-ins. The idea took off. On the slowest walk-in Wednesday last summer, 85 marriage licenses were issued and 49 weddings performed. The busiest walk-in on Wednesday saw 162 marriage licenses issued and 98 weddings performed. Kind of funny to see why people come in. Everyone has a different reason, says Department Division Chief Jennifer P. Chan. San Diego may see more weddings because a lot of folks who are deploying like to get married as soon as possible, but their schedules are not always as flexible as other engaged couples. One other possible reason, California doesn't have a residency requirement, so lovebirds from other states and countries can get married right away rather than wait. Walk-ins are seen on a first-come, first-served basis, and couples who have appointments will have priority. But P-Chan says the office does everything it can to make sure the process is a smooth one. We've practiced. We're a well-oiled machine now, said P-Chan. P-Chan also recommended downloading the marriage license application and filling it out in advance. Once the process starts, a couple can be in and out of the office within an hour. Obtaining a marriage license can take about 15 minutes and the ceremony about 20 minutes, depending on the number of guests and whether the wedding takes place inside the building, at the marriage room, or outside at the wedding arbor. Walk-in wedding Wednesdays are only available at the main office at 1600 Pacific Highway downtown from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. through August 27th. Appointments will still be required for marriage services at satellite offices in Kearny Mesa, Chula Vista, El Cajon, and San Marcos. The number to call for appointments in any of the locations is area code 619-237-0502.
The East County Magazine Show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interests, not special interests. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org.
KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, your network for social justice.
This is a public service announcement from the nonprofit East County Magazine regarding the Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alert Service. During a wildfire, it's critical to receive timely news about evacuations, shelters, threatened communities, and other vital information. Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are available free to the public via email, or you can receive the alerts via Twitter on your mobile phone. You can get information on how to sign up for these free alerts at www.eastcountymagazine.org. The Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are produced by East County Magazine with support from the Viejas Band of the Kumeyaay Nation.
How should America deal with the tens of thousands of children fleeing violence in Central America arriving at our borders? Many are traveling alone, trying to reach family members in the U.S. Most are teens, but some are as young as 3 years old. In Southern California, reactions to families from Central America were mixed. Protesters blocked buses full of the refugees in Murrieta and forced them to turn around. But in San Diego, border angels organized a drive to support the families, raising many tons of donated supplies and teddy bears for the children. Now, two governors are taking radically different approaches. In Texas, Republican Governor Rick Perry announces he is deploying up to 1,000 National Guard troops to the Mexican border to stop the influx of children. I will not stand idly by while citizens are under assault and little children from Central America are detained in squalor, said Perry, who offers no help or humanitarian aid for the youngsters, blaming Washington instead. Perry is a prospective presidential candidate for the Republican Party. By contrast, Massachusetts Democratic Governor Deval Patrick has offered to shelter the young immigrants, likening them to Jews returned away by the U.S. in 1939 after fleeing the Nazis.
The Central American children are largely fleeing violence from drug cartels and, in some cases, genocide of native Mayan people in their homeland. Massachusetts will provide temporary shelter while the children are awaiting processing to determine if they will be granted asylum in the U.S. or deported. Governor Patrick, a former civil rights lawyer who served in President Clinton's Civil Rights Division of the Justice Department, had this to say. We have rescued Irish children from famine, Russian and Ukrainian children from religious persecution, Cambodian children from genocide, Haitian children from earthquakes, Sudanese children from civil war, and New Orleans children from Hurricane Katrina. Once, in 1939, we turned our backs on Jewish children fleeing the Nazis, and it remains a blight on our national reputation, the Massachusetts governor added. The point is that this good nation is great when we open our doors and our hearts to needy children, and diminished when we don't. Reporting for East County Magazine, this is Leon Thompson.
An 18-year-old woman has died after suffering heat exhaustion during a hike at Three Sisters Falls in East County. Julian deputy sheriffs responded to a call for medical aid around 4:15 p.m. on Tuesday. At the trailhead, a hiker told deputies their 18-year-old companion was suffering from heat-related physical distress. The fire department arrived at the same time as deputies and immediately began first aid. The victim was airlifted to a local San Diego hospital, where she was later pronounced dead. Her name has not yet been released by authorities. I've hiked this trail before. While this destination is beautiful, it can also be treacherous if you're not prepared. The trail to Three Sisters Falls is rugged and steep, so it's important to carry adequate water for the all-day round-trip hike and always have a cell phone fully charged. This is Miriam Raftery, reporting for East County Magazine.
For the third year in a row, suicides and prescription drug overdoses continue to be the leading causes of death in cases investigated by the San Diego County Medical Examiner. Meanwhile, homicide numbers fell for the first time in 2 years. The Medical Examiner's office has just released its 2013 annual report. The office collects data on the nearly 10,000 deaths in the county reported last year. That's half of the roughly 20,000 deaths that occur yearly countywide. Of those, the medical examiner took jurisdiction for about 3,000 deaths, including all non-natural deaths in the county, as well as about 5% of natural deaths. These natural deaths tend to be younger people and deaths which were sudden or unexpected. Chief Deputy Medical Examiner Dr. Jonathan Lucas says one of the main reasons for the report is to help identify patterns and trends for these deaths, many of which are preventable. He states, quote, this data is useful to identify issues that may need additional resources. The data may also show whether prevention education efforts are working to address previously identified problems, end quote. The office performed autopsies on nearly 2,000 cases, and about half were given external examinations. In San Diego County, 45% of these deaths were found to be accidental, 36% were from natural causes, 15% were suicides, 3.3% were homicides, and in 1.3%, the manner of death could not be determined. Here are some more findings from the 2013 cases. Prescription drug deaths remain the most common cause of accidental deaths, though the rate fell slightly last year. Methamphetamine was a leading drug in accidental overdose deaths and set a record with 190 deaths for 2013. Alcohol was second, causing 127 accidental fatalities. Heroin deaths also continued to increase. Heroin is now the third most accidental cause of fatalities, causing 89 deaths last year. Troublingly, most accidental heroin overdose deaths were among people in their 20s. Equally disturbing, the number of suicides, 441, was the highest on record. Homicide deaths, however, fell. Last year, 88 homicides were reported to the medical examiner, down from 122 in 2012. Last year, this included 39 deaths due to firearms, 22 due to cutting or stabbing, and 15 deaths by blunt force. 10 officer-involved shootings occurred in 2013 as well. Also in 2013, 247 people died in motor vehicle accidents, down from 270 fatalities in 2012. These fatalities include passengers, pedestrians, and bicyclists. Alcohol remains a major factor in vehicle-related deaths. Cardiovascular disease continues to be the number one cause of natural deaths in the medical examiner cases, and obesity remains a major risk factor in natural deaths. The medical examiner says many of the deaths last year could have been prevented and urges people to seek help in a crisis. Here are some places to get help. Mental health and substance abuse counseling is available to anyone who is struggling or worried about a friend or loved one by calling the county's Behavioral Health Access and Crisis Line at 888-724-7240. Suicide prevention and awareness information is available at uptosd.org. 211 San Diego offers referrals to family and individual services and programs. You can call 211 or visit online. You can also get crime prevention tips and locations to drop off unwanted or expired medications at the sheriff's website. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Ed Barrena.
The impacts of violence in Gaza are being felt here in San Diego. Over 700 people turned out on Sunday at a rally in a San Diego park to raise donations for humanitarian relief for Israel. The rally was organized by the Jewish Federation of San Diego County. In addition, about 25 to 35 counter-protesters also came, outnumbered 20 to 1. Hamas, the terrorist group that controls Palestine, has been bombarding the Gaza area with rockets. Israel has retaliated to destroy tunnels built by Palestinian militants. Casualties on both sides are high, with the civilian death toll mounting and 15 Israeli soldiers dead as well. Congresswoman Susan Davis stated, "No country, large or small, would tolerate rockets raining down on their cities." She denounced Hamas, the terrorist organization that controls Palestine currently, for, quote, "shamefully using their own residents as human shields." Congresswoman Davis, who serves on the House Armed Services Committee, also said the security of Israel is important to U.S. security. Representative Scott Peters also voiced support for Israel's right to, quote, "defend itself and its children." He added that when he visited Israel last year, a missile targeting the hotel where he was staying was shot down by the Iron Dome missile defense system that the U.S. helped to provide. State Senator Marty Block from San Diego also came in support of the Israeli people. A minister brought a ram's horn, or shofar, to show his solidarity with Israel as well. Pro-Israeli protesters carried flags proclaiming, "San Diego stands with Israel." But on the opposite side of a fence, counter-protesters denounced what they view as overwhelming use of force by Israel in response to the rocket attacks on Israeli cities. One protester claimed Israel's leaders are war criminals. Israel has warned residents before the retaliatory attacks, but Hamas has urged its citizens not to leave and hails those killed as martyrs. Hamas has rejected a ceasefire offer. Hamas insists it will not stop the rocket attacks on Israel unless Israelis open their borders and free jailed Palestinians who killed three Israeli teenagers. Israel was established after World War II by the United Nations as a safe haven for Jews after the Holocaust resulted in the deaths of 7 million Jewish people. In recent years, Israel has taken in many more Jewish refugees fleeing violence and persecution in the Middle East and other places. Israel is their historic homeland, but the Gaza region is also the historic homeland of the Palestinian people, and thus far, peace in the region remains an elusive goal. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
You're listening to East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM, Descanso.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM, Descanso. Today, I am delighted to welcome the winners of last year's San Diego Music Awards for Best Blues Band, the Bayou Brothers. With a sound straight out of Louisiana's dance clubs, blues festivals, and backyard crawfish boils, the Bayou Brothers are known for their rollicking, foot-stomping, musical gumbo style. The features of a blend of, as you can hear, accordions, keyboards, guitar, bass, drums, and rubboard, all with three-part harmonies. The band performs Zydeco, R&B, and blues music in the tradition of New Orleans Mardi Gras festivities. They played for some of San Diego's biggest music festivals, including Gator by the Bay and the San Diego Blues Festival. Now, Rick Lee founded the Bayou Brothers back in 1996. So, Rick and everyone, welcome to the show.
Welcome.
Okay.
Thank you.
Rick, can you start out by introducing yourself? Tell us what you play, where you're from, and then we'll let each of the band members do the same.
My name is Rick Lee. I play drums, and I'm from Coronado, California.
My name is Sister Judy, and I play the Zydeco rubboard, and I live in Mount Helix.
All right.
I'm John. I'm on the accordion, and I live down in Imperial Beach. I'm Jack Stevens. I play guitar, and I'm living in El Cajon, and I'm from Kansas City, Missouri.
I'm Danny Perez, bassist for the Bayou Brothers out of Santee, California.
All right, right here in Santee, yeah, where our Mardi Gras is going to be. Now, can you start out, Rick, by telling us how you got this whole thing started? Are you from the South, from New Orleans, or what got you interested in this kind of music?
Well, all of us had toured through the South and picked up the flavor of Zydeco music in Louisiana. And John and I go way back to high school, John Chambers and I, and we founded the band back in, about 1996. And we just started the band as just a side project for fun. And we played Sister Judy's housewarming party. We started at a backyard party way back when. Mm-hmm. And I can't believe it, but that one gig turned to 2 to 4 to 8 to 100. We played thousands of shows.
I was at that party. Judy happens to be a neighbor of mine, and I had no idea that was where you got your start.
It's full circle now. Judy is our rubboard player now. And so anyway, we're just having a great time, and the band's been very successful to this point.
Great. Can you tell us what Zydeco music is for listeners who may not know?
Zydeco music is kind of a mixture of Cajun and soul and a little bit of blues. It's picked up a little bit, and they have several dances that they do. Zydeco, the term actually is pick it up a notch or put a little more salt in the snap beats.
I like that. I know means, I heard Rick describe it earlier as Louisiana party music. So,
and it primarily a lot of accordion, which is traditional in Zydeco music. And
Yeah, for those that think of accordion as, you know, Lawrence Welk or something, this is really radically different.
Not in Zydeco. No,
it's very exciting music.
We don't do any polkas in Zydeco, no. Okay. And we also add the rubboard.
Judy, play a little something on that rub board. Let people hear what that sounds like.
Sure. Here we go.
All right. Very nice. Now, I know that you're known for getting the audience involved, too. Tell us how that works, Judy.
Well, that's a little bit of my role as the rubboard player, because rubboard is an instrument that pretty much anybody can pick it up and make some noise with it, and it brings out a really fun side of people. Everybody gets a smile on their face when they put a rubboard over their shoulder, so always bring an extra one or two and get the audience up
in
there.
The audience, watch out, you might get to get up and play with the band.
We've had some big people play rubboard with our band. We've had the mayor of San Diego. We've had the mayor of Gloucester, England,
when we
were touring in England.
Wow, yeah, you've done a lot of traveling. Where are some of the other places that you've played, Rick?
We've done some fun gigs in Laughlin, Vegas, and the most fun was touring the UK twice. And the second time we brought this blues legend, Lazy Lester, with us, who wrote a lot of the blues hits. He's a blues Hall of Famer. We've been all over California and Nevada, Arizona. But we love playing here at home.
Speaking of here at home, we've got the two newest members of the band here, Danny and Jack from Santee and El Cajon. How did you guys get involved with all of this?
Well, I actually was... I was playing a job with a different band, and when we finished our show, I was loading my gear up, and John, an old friend of mine that I've known since about 1969, he approached me and said, "Hey, what's going on?" And I found out that their band, the Bayou Brothers, were following my group that I was with, and happened that their guitar player was on tour in Europe doing a blues show. You know, a blues thing. He does this every year.
He's a very
well-known blues guitar player in town. And John said, "Hey, you know, why don't you come fill in with us, you know, play some gigs with us, because we need guitar players." So that's what I did. I went and played with them and did a few gigs. And next thing I know, I was officially a Bayou Brother.
Fantastic.
So it's worked out well.
Yeah. I was invited to a gig to come in and participate for, as a substitute for their, you know, one of the gentlemen that were there before me, and immediately I realized the musicianship was top-notch, and the music was infectious. It was just like, wow, I love this. And in a little due time, due process, I came in to kind of be a full-time member as well, and I'm loving every minute of it.
Excellent.
Yes.
Well, it certainly is toe-tapping, lively music.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Rick, you guys write some of your own original songs as well as performing traditional music and songs written by other people. Tell us a little bit about your style and how it's evolving.
Well, a lot of songwriters like us, you take real events. Like one of my favorite new songs is Don Don's Barbecue. And we used to play this casino in Yuma, the Paradise Casino. And one of the fellas that worked there in the kitchen, Don Don, had a rib joint out there in Yuma. And he would invite us to come over. And he just had the best ribs and potato salad. And so John here wrote a song, Don Don's Barbecue, about Don Don. He's a real person, and that's where a lot of the best material comes from, is a real life experience.
Very good.
And now we're going to play a little excerpt from one of your original pieces, Zydeco Shoes. Well, I'm ready to put on my dancing shoes and get on out there on the dance floor.
Another one of your original pieces is Cajun Casserole, and this one's got a little bit of four-part harmony going.
Agents.
That is fantastic.
It's
Thank
hot.
You.
Now let's hear a little bit more about some of your music and some of the songs you might be playing at our Mardi Gras party. March 12th, and that's from 6 to 10 out at Pinnacle Peak in Santee. And the proceeds of that event, by the way, are all to benefit our reporting for East County Magazine for our show right here on KNSJ, which is nonprofit public radio. And you can get the ticket details at eastcountymagazine.org or by emailing editor@eastcountymagazine.org. They also will be on sale at Pinnacle Peak. So, Rick, can you tell us a little bit about some of the songs that we're going to be hearing?
We do some traditional Cajun and Zydeco. Jambalaya is one song that is one of my personal favorites. We have Gonna Party.
Gonna Party Till They Turn Out the Lights?
Yeah, Gonna Party Till They Turn Out the Lights. That's another favorite of mine. High Roller Zydeco is a really high-energy Zydeco tune. It's a really hip tune. It's one of my favorites. It's got great vocals, a really good hook, and a great beat.
Very cool. Then we've got one called Cupid's Shuffle.
Cupid's Shuffle has been something that has been successful, I think, at just about every show we play. Judy gets out there and gets the audience going, and there's a line dance that goes along with it, the Cupid Shuffle.
Ooh, that sounds
and
fun.
It's got, again, that infectious groove. R&B, kind of funkier, with accordion on top, and Jack strumming a funky guitar. Yeah. It's just fun.
Nice. And how about Ramblin' Man?
Well, Ramblin' Man is it's an old cover by the Allman Brothers, which they're a Southern rock band. But it's actually considered Zydeco also, and it's like a crossover, you would say. And it's just a great, great song that everybody can identify with. It just seems to always get the crowd. Every show we play, the crowd just loves it. And, of course, it lets me show off a little bit because it features a lot of guitar soloing on it, and so it's a lot of fun.
Another one, the name alone sounds pretty fiery, Hot Chili Mama.
Hot Chili Mama, yes, well, that kind of sums it up right there.
Now, I understand there's an interesting story behind one of your original songs that came about and was inspired by an incident that happened when you were playing at the San Diego Zoo. Rick, tell us what happened at the zoo.
We're playing the San Diego Zoo Wine Festival this last year. And as we're playing, one of the zookeepers came and said, "Have you guys looked behind you? There's something going on behind us." Well, it was a baby rhino that was actually dancing to our music.
Wow.
So we peeked behind the stage, and sure enough, there he was, just dancing away.
Doug the Zydeco.
To the Zydeco music. So John penned a song that we're currently going to put on our next CD called Zydeco Rhino.
Zydeco Rhino. Well, there you go. You heard about it. Your first
Zydeco Rhino. We've got kind of a jungle beat going on with the Zydeco music, so.
All right. And what's the album going to be called?
Zydeco Rhino.
Zydeco Rhino. Okay.
It
awesome.
Would be great with the picture on it. Yeah.
Where can people find out more about the Bayou Brothers, Rick?
Well, we have a website, bayoubrothers.net, and we do have a fan club run by Sister Judy. And also, one fun aspect of our website, we have Sister Judy's Rubboard Club. If you get up and you play rubboard with us, we'll take your picture and we'll put it on the Rubboard Club.
Wow.
And you'll be a member of Sister Judy's Rubboard Club.
Well, there you go. We are looking forward to that. Let's have a big round of applause here for the Bayou Brothers.
All right. And a big board.
With tinder dry conditions during the drought, Fire Chief Rick Sitta at Heartland Fire and Rescue is warning residents about the dangers of sky lanterns. "These fire lanterns pose a serious threat to our county," the chief says. Sky lanterns are prohibited by several laws and codes in California. The ban followed a bulletin from the state fire marshal in 2012 warning of the fire dangers. The fire marshal issued that bulletin in direct response to an East County Magazine investigation following a complaint from one of our readers. That led to first a ban on sky lantern sales at Walmart in Lakeside, and then after we alerted Cal Fire and the San Miguel Fire Department, the state fire marshal took action. But many people don't know that sky lantern sales are illegal here, and use of the dangerous products continues. A sky lantern is a small hot air balloon made of paper with an opening at the bottom where a small fire is suspended. The heated air from the flame causes it to rise into the air and be carried off by the wind. The problem is that once released, there is no control over where the lantern lands, said Chief Sitta. It could land in trees or bushes, on hillsides and canyons, or on someone's home. Sky lanterns have grown in popularity over the years due to movies and commercials. They are often seen at weddings and vigils. Invented in China, the lanterns were first used as signals during the wars. They are now launched at festivals for good luck and to send wishes skyward. Chief Sitta is discouraging the use of sky lanterns at any time, especially during the 4th of July in the midst of fire season. The U.S. Fire Marshals Association has also adopted a resolution urging states to ban the sale and use of sky lanterns. There is a serious fire and safety hazard associated with sky lanterns. The potential to start an unintended fire on or off the property from which they are released cannot be overlooked. Sky lanterns have been the cause of commercial, residential, and wildland fires worldwide. Reporting for East County Magazine, this is Trevor Hill on KNSJ.
This concludes today's episode of East County Magazine's radio show. We extend our appreciation to the East County Wellness Center for our studio space, to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Giovanni Galicia and the Smashing Beats, Donnie Gentile, Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, A.K. Jules, Brian Boykel, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, April's Dance from the Smart Sound Solo Simplicity Collection, and Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road. We also thank the County of San Diego for a community enhancement grant to support our Destination East County segment. If you have story ideas or would like to underwrite the East County Magazine radio show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617. We'll be back soon for another edition of East County Magazine's radio show.